Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 242.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we learn that Shakira learned how to skateboard during the quarantine. And I mean, she already had hips that didn't lie. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and this is a little embarrassing for me to admit, but I've always wanted to know how to skateboard. And I just, have long felt that my moment passed. But now that Shakira is doing it, and that me and her are so similar, of course, I still have time to learn how to skateboard without feeling too much shame. Today, we're going to talk about the thing adjacent to skateboarding, by which I mean schools. We're going to talk about schools reopening. And we're also going to talk about Governor Cuomo and his latest troubles. And finally, CPAC. What happened and does it even matter? Today, I love this panel. Folks, this is so exciting. We have from the War Report podcast, just a wonderful comedian. You've heard her on the show before. You've loved her on the show before. That's why she's a veteran of Fake the Nation. You should be immediately subscribing to the War Report. Folks, it's Shalewa Sharp. Hey, Shalewa.
Hello. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm good. I am also joined from the western coast of the United States by, this guy. He is, he's just someone I look up to, that I've looked up to for lo these many years. He's so fantastic. I've never seen him do poorly in a room in which audiences are meant to laugh. He always gets them to laugh. Even the ones that are not in the mood laugh when this guy walks on stage. He's host of the podcast Back to School. He's got a new stand-up comedy special on Peacock called Pandemic Warrior. And he is the pinnacle of Iranian American comedians in the world. It is Maz Jobrani. Hey, Maz.
Hi, Nagin. Thank you. You look up to me. Makes me feel old.
Well, and also, I want to. I said you're the pinnacle of Iranian American comedians, which does not mean that you're not also a pinnacle of just comedians. So, just so we're clear on the compliment there.
I didn't mean to water it down. No. I check passports on the way in. You need to have an Iranian and an American passport, or otherwise, you're not allowed into my shows.
He's really serious about that, guys. Folks, before we get into the show, I just wanted to make a quick announcement to the people of Fake the Nation. We have been on the Earwolf Network for four and a half years, almost 5 years now, and it's been wonderful. And our time is coming to a close. I'm gonna move Fake the Nation. Fake the Nation continues, so don't worry if you had a little heart dropping moment there. Fake the Nation continues, but it will continue in another home. We'll be moving over to HeadGum. We're really excited. We'll have to say goodbye to some of our favorite people here at Earwolf, which I'm not prepared to do, nor will I ever be prepared to do. But I just want to let you guys know that as of March 18th, we're going to be moving over. So just keep an eye. It should all happen through the miracles of modern technology without you even knowing. It should just happen, and then you should just continue to be subscribed. But in case it doesn't, go ahead and take a look March 18th. Make sure you're still subscribed. And I want to point out part of this move is that I'm going to start a Patreon. I launched a Patreon just so we can keep the quality of Fake the Nation nice and high, and so that we can also provide a bunch of bonus stuff. You can join the Patreon and get bonus episodes of Fake the Nation. You can get some bonus pieces of writing. You'll get a t-shirt. You'll get a mug. There's all these different options. So feel free to join us at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And see what the party is about. You know what I mean? Thank you so much. And for those of you who have literally reached out to me and asked me why I haven't started a Patreon, you're extra special to me because it encouraged me to in fact do so. All right, so let us move into topic number one. Okay, we're going to talk about schools reopening. And before we do that, can I admit something to you two, which I feel weird about, and we'll talk about why I feel weird, which is that I got the first dose of the vaccine.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I feel weird because I have a comorbidity. And I'm not here to like share my fucking medical history. I'm like a generally healthy person, but I have a comorbidity, so I felt weird. I talked to multiple doctors, literally more than one. I had a letter. I had multiple forms of documentation about prescriptions, like all sorts of stuff, because I was like, how would a healthy person like me have a comorbidity and be eligible for the vaccine? It doesn't make sense. But anyways, I got the vaccine, and I went through a moral rigmarole of whether or not I should be the type of person to get the vaccine at this relatively early date. Anyways, I did. And is it weird that I feel weird, or does everybody feel weird about this whole thing?
I hear you. I also got shot number one.
Congratulations.
Same reason. I got some junk in my background that likes to rear its head earlier and earlier every generation. And
nice.
So I've been battling with that already. And mm-hmm. so I'm just like, I'm not going to go out on a technicality. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like either I'm going to get a full stroke on its own merits. You know, bootleg COVID strokes. So I went ahead and got the shot. And I don't know if I would have really done much of the work because I don't necessarily like doing work. But a friend of mine who has his own issues was like, here's this link. Here's where you go. Here's what you're supposed to take. Make sure you get this. And I'm like, well, you keep texting me this much. And it is 3 a.m. So I feel like you are also working through the emotions necessary to decide if we're, so let's do it together.
Great. And a friend of mine, yes, Mike.
I think you guys are both legit. I mean, you guys are legit people regardless. You're not, you know, no, you know what I'm saying? You're not like some, mm-hmm. You're not some finagler, you know, if you were right. if you were in the Trump White House and you were saying what you're saying now, you were like, oh, I got this comorbidity. I'd be like, really? What's your comorbidity? Racism? What is it? What's your comorbidity? Right? But you guys are legit. So I don't even need to know what it is. I trust you because I know a lot of people, like you said, are cheating the system. And Negin, going back to the Iranian-American community, a friend of mine said there was some meme going around saying that to get the vaccine, you either got to be older, have a comorbidity, or be Persian. So it looks like, and I have a feeling that that's true for a lot of communities, like the Russians, the Armenians. Every community's probably got their own version of this. And I will tell you the one thing, the people that piss me off, I have a lot of conservative Iranian friends and some conservative non-Iranian friends. And they somehow found ways to cheat the system. They first denied that the coronavirus
was
real.
It was a pandemic, right.
There was a pandemic. And then they poo-pooed on Dr. Fauci. But then as soon as the vaccine came around, they're like, oh, let me get a fake doctor's note saying I'm a doctor, whatever it is. And they've gone and done it. I'm like, you hypocritical pieces of shit. That's who I'm upset at. You two are fine.
Thank you. We got the Musk seal of approval. But I just want to say, if there are disproportionate numbers of Iranians running around with a fucking jab in their arms, I do have to say that like 95% of our community is doctors. So that may also explain that.
Yeah, we all know a doctor. We all know a doctor that can either give you a shot or give you a note that says you're like a doctor's assistant or something. I swear to God. And you know it. And listen, by the way, again, whenever I poo-poo on our community, I know that there's other communities that have this going on as well.
Sure.
It's just that I'm on that newsletter.
Indians, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
Your wife is Indian, right, Maz?
She is. Like, we should have gotten the vaccine a long time ago.
Between the two of you, you should have invented the vaccine already in your house. All right. Well, let's move into the school reopening. So this has just been a crazy situation. I don't have school-age children. My kid is too little. So it's not something that I've been directly impacted by. Childcare is something that I've been directly impacted by, which is a slightly different issue. But Maz, I know you have kids. What have your kids been doing and how has this issue impacted you?
First of all, real quickly, you just reminded me, since my wife is Indian and I'm Iranian, we should have created our own vaccine. We could have called it MazTraZeneca.
Hey, come ladies on. And gentlemen.
Come
there
on.
He is with the own name puns, which is a whole other category of puns.
Now, to go to the kids, so it's been a year. My daughter's 10. My son is 12. They've been doing a year of Zoom schooling. To their credit, they have done pretty well. They're both social beings, and they both are pretty self-motivated. It's actually kind of funny because my daughter ended up constantly doing dance parties with her friend or her friends. And so we have two stories. So I would walk around downstairs and all I would hear is just jumping up and down upstairs. Sounded like an earthquake. I'm going, is she going to school or is she, what's she doing up there? And it was like, bambity, bang, 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 all day long. I'm like, is she in the school from Fame? What is she doing? What are they doing up there? And just today was her first day back in-person schooling. I just dropped her off maybe a half an hour ago. I am so happy. She's so happy. We're all so happy. And they've followed all the guidelines. They're going to be COVID testing, social distancing, masks on. It's not a Governor Abbott Texas style, come in and spit on each other.
Right. And then do you feel like it should have happened sooner?
You know, I honestly, like, I have a friend of mine because we see a lot of people are saying, oh, these teacher unions and this and that. And I go, look, I don't know the details of what's going on behind the scenes. I 100% understand teachers wanting safety measures put in place, whether it means getting vaccinated or whether it means limiting the numbers of kids in classes. My kids go to private school, so I'm not going to give an opinion to some public school teacher to go, you should be in there teaching. What's wrong with you? Well, I don't know what's going on with them. So I've had friends reach out to me and say, hey, can you advocate for schools opening up again? And I said, I want to go with the science. I'm going to trust the science. I'm going to trust that as the numbers go to a certain level, then the government or the state governments are saying, now we're at the right numbers. Now let's go. I mean, we can't rush into it is the problem. So as much as it's been hard to have kids at home, I've been lucky and I have no complaints. That said, I know that there's, you know, families that have tighter spaces, more people at home, less access to computers. So it's a really complicated issue. And I think it's hypocritical for me to be in a position where I have these choices and options and then tell people what to do in terms of going back to school.
Shalewa, in Baltimore, more than half of 3rd through 12th graders have failed a class during remote learning. You know, they're really, and that's just a statistic out of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And again, these things are run by municipalities and by states. And so getting some kind of national statistic is not necessarily that easy. But what do you think? Obviously, remote learning sucks.
Yeah, it is not for everyone. But then again, in-person learning, also not for everyone. I can't be 100% sure some of those kids wouldn't have just stopped working on their own. If there's anything that COVID has done, it's to me the only positive that I've seen from it. And it's not particularly positive. And that is that COVID has... It's just illuminated all of the cracks in our system, right? Mm-hmm. So there are, so it's just multi-tiered. We think it's just one big thing. Well, I don't know, put up some plexiglass and the kids should be fine. But no, it's more than that. It's, well, maybe we should crack a window. Okay, well, some schools aren't even able, their buildings aren't even able to handle an open window.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like that's not, so then how do we even, it's such an overhaul of the entire system that's necessary. And I don't even, and it's been, you know, as long as this has been going on, it's been one of those things that I feel like everyone kind of throws their hands up on. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like people are willing to really fight for restaurants or fight. And parents are also willing to fight for schools. But there are so many folks who are just like, well, I mean, they said early on that the kids are going to be fine. So just toss, keep them home. You know what? No, never mind. Bring them in. No, half the time. Like they're switching it so much.
All the time. Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
It's hard to figure out where we are.
It's really hard to figure out. And I'm almost, I feel like not that the year should be a complete wash, but I mean, you know, maybe call a mulligan. You know what I mean? Let's not hold on
well,
to the standards
like,
that
like
we had before so tightly.
Knowing what a year was like, I think if you can open schools tomorrow, if you can open schools in April, whatever it is, I think any number of weeks is better than no weeks for this school year. Just remembering how long a year felt as a kid and how, you know, we think about like high school. High school was only 4 years, but we talk about it for the rest of our lives. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
so,
right. Yeah.
So thinking about like, I still think it's worthy to make every effort to open schools as quickly as possible and still have this be a semester worth having. But I also think the weird thing that has happened, and this is to me the most stunning thing about it, is that your political affiliation is the best indicator of whether your local school is open than any other data point. In red states, you're more likely to go to a place where the school system is open than in blue states, which is interesting because you'd almost think in every situation that would be the reverse, right? Because we actually fight for social programs like schools. But in blue states, I mean, so New York has had a hybrid system for I think since the end of September, but mm-hmm. I think there's been some moments when it's been shut down because of we went past a threshold or something.
Right.
Like you said, Shalewa, it's in and out so much. You just don't really know what specifically is happening. But like in Nebraska, there's been a lot of places with in-person 5 days a week. Again, I think as populations are more sparse in certain red states, it's been easier to easier to control coronavirus. Maybe it's been easier to have lower numbers. Is it weird to you guys that it's taken on this political element where, like, if you're a Republican, you're more likely to have access to an open school?
Not at all. No. Everything's politicized now. First of all, going back to what Shalewa was saying, it really does shine the light on the inequities. And it shines a light on, because some people say, the people critical of teachers, they go, some of these teachers aren't going back because they're getting paid more unemployment than they are, you know, having to go, or it's easier for them to teach at home than it is at school. Well, how about we pay teachers more money? How about we change the paradigm of the amount of money that we pay teachers? So you pay them your children's lives are in their hands. So we spend, I don't know, trillions and trillions of dollars on a lot of other things like the defense budget or whatever it is, or bailing out big corporations. And now we're not behind a $15 minimum wage. We're not behind helping teachers get a pay raise so that they are able to make a living and live a normal life. So right away, it shows the inequities in our community and in our societies and where we put our interests. I remember being in some European country touring at one point, and I was talking about all the hoops that our kids got to jump through to have the right extracurricular activities, to be able to go to college and all this other stuff. And they go, wow, you guys really go out of your way. Like over here, everyone goes to college. Over here, everyone's got access to education. Over here, we value our teachers. So that's one thing. Now, this thing of red state, blue state, we have politicized every damn thing there is to politicize. The mask. How do you politicize a mask? Just put on the goddamn mask and shut the hell up. And if you don't want to put it on, then stay home. But somehow when it came out, the right starts politicizing it. It's my right, my freedom to know. You know what? They take that and they put that into everything. So as soon as we go, you know what, guys? The science says you should just keep distanced and don't go to school. Just stay home for a little bit. It's my right to go to school. God damn it. Just shut up and stay home and get your Zoom schooling going until it's safe, and then you can go back to school. And as you just said, Nagin, these are the same people who sit there and go, well, schools are brainwashing our kids to become liberal, communist, socialists. Then don't send them to school. What is wrong with you?
But I need to get them out of the house so that I can.
Yeah, I need the
child care. I mean, they're brainwashing them, but they're also giving me like a free six hours.
It's so weird because there's, first of all, And I should emphasize this. There is overwhelming evidence to suggest that schools are not a major vector of disease. So, of the coronavirus in particular. So the evidence says that we shouldn't be worried. There's some unions that have, apparently in San Francisco, there was a union that was saying that even prioritizing teacher vaccination wouldn't be enough to get teachers back, which to me, I'm like, well, if vaccinating teachers won't get them back, then what is, you know, I mean, I do think There seems to be a lot of local union teachers unions saying things. There's Randy Weingarten in Washington, D.C. saying things and trying to, because there's been a backlash against teachers unions, like you mentioned, Maz. And then there's also parents who are like, well, I don't want to send my kids back. It's not safe, even though, again, the evidence suggests otherwise. And then there's also, distrust from some, Black and Latinx families that are like, the pandemic has been, has hit us harder. We don't trust the system. So there's a lot of factors here going on. And then again, there's just that basic politicization. People like Steve Scalise are like capitalizing on this and trying to make the GOP seem like the education party. I know. As I say it, it makes me laugh immediately.
Every time. That's an instant laugh. Oh my goodness.
So, all right. Well, we're going to move on. But folks, let me know what you think. I'm so curious to hear. Do you think the GOP is the education party? Do you think the Democrats are doing this wrong? Do you think the teachers unions are doing this wrong or right? Or where? Who is what? What is happening? Let me know. And I should also mention, on the politics of childcare, I did a wonderful Instagram live conversation with Diana Lamangi from Parenting and Politics podcast. Again, you can see that on my Instagram feed. We talk about the politics of childcare. So it is there waiting for you if you want a little cousin conversation to this conversation. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about topic number two. And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. So Governor Cuomo, known mostly by the country as the nation's dad for his handling of the pandemic, the kind of leader we wanted because Donnie sucked so hard, he is now in the midst of a scandal due to inappropriate sexual behavior. So I'll detail some of those allegations, but first, what was your opinion of Cuomo before all of this? Shalewa?
Well, I wasn't... it was wild because I wasn't entirely sure how much of an opinion I could have about New York politics since I had only been living here for not that long.
Mm.
So I was like, am I allowed to say that this guy seems a little jerky? He seems a little jerky. But then again, he's also a politician. He has his pop's old job. So there's that whole thing that
dynasty
comes with
element. Yeah,
yeah, just like I'm running things because my pop did, and why would you question me? We know what we're doing. And I mean, that that may work like for mechanics, but I'm not sure that works for, like, you know, governors. And so his tone was at the time with all of his press conferences, his tone was very definitive, but it also seemed to be it seemed to be very like, see, Trump, this is how you do it. And I'm always a little skeptical when someone is performing for basically for Trump as the audience, like for your actual audience. But then knowing that he's probably
he's
watching.
Attention. Right. Right.
So,
right,
you know, I'm like, all right, we got a lot going on. And you two are playing like Connect Four via press conferences. And it's not really ideal. And also I'd been hearing like kind of lousy things about his policies before all of this. Mm. So when things started to come out now, I'm like, well, all right, this isn't fully surprising. He definitely strikes me as someone who has watched The Godfather too many times and latched on to the wrong character, you know. And he thinks he's this guy, and he may be more like the other guy. You know, so it's not surprising that he's kind of not a great dude, and that he's also attempting to kiss women without their permission. That's problematic, but that's also like that tracks.
It doesn't seem super out of character. So Maz, you're in California. What was your opinion of Cuomo from afar?
I got to be honest. I knew the name, obviously, from the father and from the brother. And I knew, you know, he was the governor. But again, in California, I'm not paying as much attention to his specific policies in New York. I come to New York. I love New York. New York's fantastic. You know, I'm guessing New York is one of the states that is doing things right. But I'm not, again, I'm not paying as much attention. But when the pandemic hit, and to Shalewa's point, it felt like the Trump administration was mishandling it so much and in such denial and saying it's a hoax and then just always looking for excuses. To see this guy come on the screen and go, we're listening to the science, we're going to lock it down. I go, because, you know, obviously New York got hit really hard right away. I was sitting there telling my wife, I go, because that was around the time the primaries were going on, and I'm looking at all the candidates, and I'm going, oh God, Elizabeth Warren, the right is going to say she's a communist. Bernie, the same thing. I love those two, but they're not going to be able to beat Trump. I was looking for someone to beat Trump, and then I'm going, Biden, I don't know. You know, maybe he's too old, yada, yada, yada. And then I was like, God, I wish Governor Cuomo could run because he's tough and he'll give it to him and did it. Now, when all this stuff came out, I'm like, thank God he didn't run because, you know, they would have thrown that right in the middle. And here's the irony, though, because they would have thrown that in the middle and he would have been like, no, I didn't, or whatever his excuses are. And then they would have said, Donald, you did it too. And then his followers would have been like, we don't care what he did. So interestingly enough, like our side, the liberals and left side cares, which is good. And then the right side just doesn't. Whenever I see these things, I'm like, Al Franken had the pictures and then there were some accusations and then he was gone. And that was it. And Donald, like, feels like every week somebody comes out and goes,
I think it was like the last count was like 27 like allegations were made against Donald Trump. And they were like far in excess of anything that we're seeing here.
And also, by the way, just like Shalay was saying, it's Donald, when you hear about Donald Trump, you're not surprised. And when you hear it from Governor Cuomo, you're not surprised. You imagine these guys are probably doing this crap to women and it's totally inappropriate. But you're not surprised. You go, oh yeah, of course. Look at this guy. Of course he's been doing this. He's some 70-year-old dude who's been going around tapping women on the butt, going like, hey, sweetheart, how you doing? Hot stuff, whatever they say.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Right. It's like, there's a little bit of stereotyping we're doing there, but it is, you know, like the language from the press conferences, all that stuff, like it kind of like connotes this kind of dude. Just so listeners are clear, there was an accusation. There was three, as of this taping on Wednesday afternoon, there were three accusations. One of conversations about with an aide, a young, I think she was in her 20s, aide, about her sex life and whether she would have a relationship with an older man. And another case, actually want to point out, one of the accusations came from Lindsay Boylan, who's running for Manhattan Borough President, who's actually been on this show. And I haven't talked to her about it. I don't know, since. But she also said that he had tried to kiss her. And then another accusation came out about his behavior at a wedding.
Ooh, where that one was a doozy.
There's a photo of him holding her face because I guess he kissed her on the cheek.
He tried to. That one really hit me because I'm like, that's not even whether or not he's the governor. He's an older man who a woman was trying to say something at a wedding, and he first allegedly put his hand on the small of her back. I'm like, already, we're about to scrap. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't do that. That's just not what you do. And so, and then that someone happened to capture it in a picture. I was just like, see, these old dudes, they got to get with the program.
Right.
Snapping pictures all the time. You got to be faster with your alleged assaults. You got to be faster with them. Speed of light.
They're most of their dating life happened before the iPhone, so they're not
right. They're still moving slow, like they're.
By
in
the
a
way,
movie.
I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, but I had a professor in college who was like, they're putting phone cameras on phones now. I mean, who thinks that's a good idea? and that guy was really wrong. That took off. He thought that was going to flop hard, and it did not.
He was the opposite of Steve Jobs. He was the Steve Jobs.
Oh, Maz, with the puns today. You're really fucking killing it. I want to point out something interesting about this situation. Now, look, so I was having some chats with my coffee crew, socially distanced outside in the cold coffee crew. And, the thing with the allegations is, again, some of the Trump allegations are just like straight up, he pushed me into a dressing room, then he forced down my pants. Like, they're stories of aggression. And these are more stories of like the dude, I mean, I've been to a wedding with that dude. You know what I mean? I remember my first job. There was a bunch of older dudes who would say, ask me questions about my love life all the time. Now, it was a part of a culture that was accepted then. It shouldn't have been accepted. And now it's like those same dudes have jobs and they just haven't learned, they haven't grown or like learned anything or whatever. So I think in some senses for some people, these accusations are not good. This is not something men should be doing. But the question is, should he be impeached? Should he be fired or however it works for a governor? For example, this is what Kristen Gillibrand said. Now, real recall, Kristen Gillibrand was at the front lines of like, get Al Franken out of here, right? This is what she had to say about this situation. She said, the behavior described in these allegations against Governor Cuomo is completely unacceptable and every allegation of sexual harassment must be taken seriously and be reviewed. That felt new to me because basically she's asking for due process. What do you think about that reaction from people like her?
I think absolutely. I think you gotta review it. You can't just, as you just said, what are the circumstances? What happened? And obviously it's inappropriate behavior, but what level of penalization, punishment yeah. comes with it? Is he willing to, you know, go a step further and show that he's learned and apologize? Are they willing to accept his apology? Was it, it needs to be looked at absolutely, because otherwise you're going to end up with backlash as people start to just accuse people with like, oh, that person, whatever, kissed me on the cheek. And then you got to start firing everybody who kissed somebody on the cheek. And also, by the way, Negin, we come to this, which is our cultures. There's a lot of cultures, whether it's the Middle Eastern culture, the Italian culture, the European culture. There's a lot of like kissing on the cheek and hello.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been in those situations where I'll come to someone and I'll put my hand out to shake. And then I feel like, whether it's a guy or a girl, do they want to go in for the side to side kiss or not? And I try to make them kind of initiate it because I don't want to get, you know,
right.
make anyone feel uncomfortable. But I've also seen people at events reach out their hands, even like with relatives of mine that are women, and the guy will reach out his hand and then pull her in and do a lip kiss. And I'm like, what the hell was that? I go, that's right. not supposed to do that.
Right.
So there's a lot of shades here, nuances, shades of gray that we need to look at, and not to at all minimalize what I've heard or read so far. But I think Senator Gillibrand is right that it needs to be looked at. And if the guy's got to go, he's got to go. But let's look at it first.
Yeah. I am into the due process angle. Yeah, Shalewa?
I think it does need to be looked at. And I think it's also the reason it's such an issue now is because it's happening at the same time that other allegations about his conduct that have nothing to do with assault.
Right. That have to do with nursing homes.
Numbers. And then being somewhat abusive towards his workforce, which I don't know if that is necessarily going to get someone to lose their job. I mean, I certainly know of people who have jobs now who definitely yelled
at dicks.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to be enough. So definitely look at it. But again, this is partially why this happens on the Democratic side is we tend to be, well, let's look at it all. Let's shuffle through the papers. Did we talk to everybody? And on Republican sides, they're just like, we're not going to do that work. We're just going to believe our dude. We just don't believe what he said. I don't feel like doing the work. And I mean, because
And I think, and there was a moment, I think, for Democrats where they also were not doing the work. They were just like, he needs to resign immediately and we're not going to investigate. You know, because Al Franken was asking for an investigation, but he didn't get one. Cuomo is also asking for an investigation and sent a referral to open a formal investigation to Attorney General Letitia James, and that she will be initiating an independent investigation. So I think that is where we've also grown, because these things shouldn't just be mob mentality. We hear a thing. I want to know exactly what's going on. I also want to know how many people were involved. I want to know, did someone go to HR and HR didn't handle it well? I want to know, because I also think I would love to get to the place where these things like a minor incident happens. A person like Cuomo is told, he goes to a bunch of seminars, he gets a shitload of training on what not to do, and he's, you know, given the opportunity to rehabilitate, you know what
right.
I mean?
After a minor incident,
right?
Yeah, but, you know, keep in mind, initially he was trying to get one of his cronies to be in charge of the investigation. So, you know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly. I think yeah, on two so occasions. Like, again, and I'm not, yeah. so I'm not trying to defend Cuomo
right,
in
no,
particular.
Right. But it's just.
Because it's also, by all accounts, he was unpleasant. Like, he had a list.
Yeah.
He bullied people, like all of that stuff. I mean, again, I don't know. But
yeah,
these are the rumors that we've heard.
It may not be so much a political thing, although it is, you know, a political thing in that we're talking about it happening in politics, as it is more of a personality trait. And,
right.
You know, we're dealing with the types of personalities who do these things and feel this way. And they also, unfortunately, you know, tend to be the kind of personalities that are that go for power, that try to hold as much power as possible and do not want to let it go. So really, it's not even like a, how do we check this out and all, you know, and why aren't they checking it out and all of that stuff. It's just kind of like it needs to be developed on a more human level of like, why does this kind of person keep doing this? And if that's the thread that goes through everyone, no matter where, what
yeah.
side of the aisle they sit on, then that almost, it seems like that's what investigations, that's what should be used to develop the correct kinds of investigations.
Yes.
Yeah, I do think as a society, you're right, Shalewa, I think with all this stuff coming out, it's making the younger generations realize that, sure, I mean, there's still going to be, it's human nature to want power. So there's young people
right.
that are running for different political office or trying to be CEOs or whatever they're doing. But I think they're learning more and more that you can't play by the rules of the old days when people would mm-hmm. do this stuff and get away with it. As you said, there's cameras, there's people that are speaking up, and that's a good thing. So it looks like at least we're moving in the right direction with this stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So, folks, let me know what you think about this Cuomo situation. Do you just want him to resign immediately? Do you want to see an investigation with some answers? What do you want from this situation? I'm so curious. Let me know. And before we move on to topic number three, I want to let everybody know about Persian New Year is just around the corner. It's a holiday we like to celebrate here at Fake the Nation. There's a book called Seven Special Somethings. It's a children's book by Adib Khoram, Khorram, and it's a children's book about Persian New Year. It explains the seven special items that we put up and celebrate during this time. It's a great secular holiday. It celebrates the first day of spring. I highly recommend it. If you're looking for a spring holiday to distract you from your pandemic doldrums, Persian New Year is just the thing. Maz, do you agree?
I absolutely agree. It's a good, you know, the actual New Year falls on the first moment of spring because it was based on the, you know, thousands of years ago when the crops, the farmers would their crops would start to grow again because it's spring. So it really kind of makes sense to celebrate New Year when your crops are starting to grow again, as opposed to December 31st, when you're freezing your ass off somewhere in a winter wonderland. So yes, things are going to be brightening up. Smells will be better. And hopefully you can smell, which means you don't have the virus.
All right. Let us. Oh, yeah. So check out that book. It's called Seven Special Somethings. It's really a cute children's book that explains it all. And I've been reading it to my kid, and she loves it. There's a really cute cat in it. All right. Topic number three. CPAC happened last weekend. That's the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's gained some influence over the years. This time it was in Orlando, Florida, and it featured speeches from the likes of Donnie Jones, Ron DeSantis, Josh Hawley. I mean, just the who's who of the election was stolen crew. And of course, speaking of which, Donnie himself, he broke his silence at CPAC with one of his really boring speeches. What were your takeaways from CPAC?
I mean, look, the Juggalos have a party, and why shouldn't the conservatives, you know, get together, drink some Sprite or whatever it is, just do it up. But I didn't even, I kind of tried to not pay attention because I was just like, y'all, it's too soon. You know, you just stormed the castle. Give us like a hot second, you know?
Right, right. Let's just give us a breather. We want to do a nice lavender bath and recover.
You know, it's
from
just like
that.
One party after another. You know, first we gather at the Capitol, and now we're just going to take the party down to Florida. And it seemed like a lot. And also, it seems like everybody is still kind of on that whole election was stolen thing, which it's feels crazy. So yesterday.
Oh, yeah, very hack, very hack.
Yeah, very hack, very.
Maz, here's my question for you. Do you I was even unsure if we should be talking about this. And I heard a journalist saying that, like, that if Obama had spoken at a conference, in 2017 or whatever, like Netroots Nation or something, and he was going to make some points about the future or whatever, like it would have been covered breathlessly. And that even though Donnie wants the attention and he shouldn't get it 99% of the time, but in this situation, it is something, you know, about the future of the party and about, you know, the 2024 race. And so that it should be covered. Maz, do you think we should even be talking about this?
I have a hard time even saying the guy's name. Yeah. I had a hard time for 4 years saying the word that president before his name. And it's funny because when he was denying the election results, and then he continued, still continues to this day, saying it was not that he won. I have friends on the right who would say, well, you know, you guys went right into Russiagate and claiming the Russians helped. And I said, well, the Russians did help. And I said, there was other issues, but nobody sat there for 4 years on the left saying he was, Hillary basically, conceded.
The election was stolen.
Conceded
right.
The next day. Then we went into legal, the Mueller investigation to find out what was possibly behind it. But we weren't sitting there saying, no, this is, they stole it. I mean, there's a nuance to it, right? Because he's straight up saying they stole it. There's no way. We got 74 million. How could he have gotten? And what's underneath of the subtext of it all is the votes of black people shouldn't count. The votes of people of color shouldn't count. The votes in these cities where in Georgia and in Pennsylvania and these other places where they flipped, these votes shouldn't count. And not only that, but they're going further with it, and now they're trying to make it harder to vote. There's a lot of serious shit that's going down that these people are doing. And so I think, because I have friends on the right who keep telling me they're upset about the cancel culture going, oh my God, now they're Dr. Seuss is canceled. Now Mr. Potato Head is what? And I go, you guys are gaslighting the real issues. The real issues are the taking away of voter rights, the lying to your own party, just like Mitt Romney said. Mitt Romney said, if you want to be, of service to your constituents, he was saying this to the Republicans, he said, then don't lie to them. Tell them the truth that the election was lost. They lost the election. How could you win the election at the presidential level and lose the election at the presidential level, but then win on the down ballots? Like, right. Where was all this? So it makes zero logical sense. So when these nut jobs, when these nut jobs get together at CPAC, look, I try as much as I can. I try to understand the other side. I try to go, gosh, I've kind of become super partisan in many ways. Let me try. Let me tune in for a second, see what Fox News is saying. And I last about a minute and I go, I can't, Ted Cruz is an idiot who, I don't know what his deal is. I don't know what Josh Hawley's is. None of these people are people that
I
can imagine.
I'll tell you one thing we know about Ted Cruz is that he really likes Cancun.
He likes Cancun. He tried to do comedy at that thing. He's horrible. He's just a bad human being.
He really
comedian. Tried to do comedy.
And I will tell you guys real quickly, Megan, sorry, I'll just put a button on this. This thing of like ignoring CPAC and not covering it. Look, the other side does it too, because the other day, while they had the FBI director Wray was testifying in front of Congress about the storming of the Capitol and an attempt to have a coup d'etat in America, while he was talking about that, CNN, MSNBC were covering it. Fox News was not covering it. So in their minds, 1-6 didn't happen, or let's not bring it up, let's just move on. And similarly for me, if some weird shit's happening with CPAC, I don't need to hear about it. And I think the less air we give it, the better. And the more we focus on, you know, pushing through the things that Democrats promised they would with the stimulus package, the $15 minimum wage, voting rights acts, get all that stuff through so the next elections come through. We go, look, we have a majority. Let's keep this momentum going.
Here's a couple of things that came out of CPAC. There was a straw poll that found 55% of respondents said they would vote for Trump in a hypothetical 2024 primary. 95% said that they wanted the Republican Party to continue Trump's agenda and policies, which my big question is, what agenda and policies? Right. Anyways, like he was very low, light on it, except for walls and stuff. But anyway, in a straw poll where they excluded Trump from the running. In a straw poll where they excluded Trump, DeSantis led with 43%. Kristi Noem from South Dakota, I believe she's from, had 11%. Donnie Jones had 8%. Mike Pompeo and Ted Cruz both came in at 7%.
Wow, so they don't even like Ted Cruz.
Yeah, no. Nobody likes him.
Nobody likes him. He's the saddest peanut character. Nobody likes him
except for his Cancun crew. And they didn't even like him because they're the ones who outed him
to the media. No, they didn't. Yeah, they don't like him or his wife. Yeah.
I thought that stuff was interesting. Here's the kind of like the big ticket news from Donnie's boring speech was that he is not going to start a third party. He says he's not going to start a third party. Obviously, he's a known liar, so it's unclear what he'll do. But he says he's not starting a third party. Are you... what do you think of that? Are you secretly disappointed he's not starting a third party?
He's not. I'm not surprised because it takes a lot of work to start a third party, and all of the stuff is already set up on the Republican side.
There's a lot of forms.
It's already easy to get the money.
Well, it's not him that needs to start a third party. It's the others that got to start their own third party because he's already taken over this party.
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
If the Lincoln Project types want to come out sounding sane and doing sane stuff, they're the ones who got to start a third party. And going back to guys like Ted Cruz, it's crazy because, as you said, nobody likes him or a lot of these people, but they like them enough to vote for them. Now, the question becomes, why would a majority of Texans vote for this very unlikable human being? And it's pretty simple because they just always play that card of, if the other guy wins, he's going to take your guns and he's going to be aborting babies at 10 months and they're going to be liberal and they're going to be socialist. And that's every time these people fall for this rhetoric of these horrible human beings like a Ted Cruz or a Josh Hawley or a Marco Rubio or a Donald Trump. I sit there and I go to these people that are complaining, the people on the right who are falling for it. I go, what exactly are you asking for? What are you exactly afraid of when you say there's a socialist, communist plot that's going to happen? Are you afraid of your minimum wage being raised? Are you afraid that we're going to have some regulations? Yeah, are you afraid that we're going to have some regulations right. that it's going to clean your air a little bit so that your child doesn't grow horns? Are you? What are you afraid of? Because it's true, because for years and years, these people have fallen for this. And they keep saying, yes, there's this. By the way, anyone who, because I also have educated Republican friends who talk about what the, you know, the left wants to do with the regulation. Therefore, that's why a person as bad as Ted Cruz can win, or a person as sure. as bad as Donald Trump can become their hero. And I go, look, you're afraid that somehow America's going to become this communist country that's going to become like the former Soviet Union. But let me remind you, America is a capitalist nation at its core. And if you don't believe me, how did we go into lockdown last year when the virus was circling around us? It wasn't the government that said, oh, there's a virus, lock
it
down.
It was like, it was the NBA.
The NBA. A private corporation had to lock us down.
Right.
When Trump kept doing things that were on Twitter when he was attacking our democracy and about to try to overthrow the government, was it the Congress that sat there? Was it the courts that said, oh, shut him down? No, it was Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, private companies. We are at our core a capitalistic society. But these guys keep playing on these fears, and you get your Ted Cruz's and your Marco Rubio's and all these people still being considered as possible candidates.
And by the way, this was the most disheartening thing, Mitch. But first of all, Mitt Romney, who was probably everyone's favorite most reasonable Republican, was not there. But he's also probably not very much invited, you know what I mean, to these affairs anymore. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, remember the term compassionate conservatism? You remember how George W. Bush ran on a platform of compassionate conservatism? That
no,
it feels
that doesn't,
so
that doesn't
quaint.
Seem like a real thing.
Quaint. I know.
That couldn't
I
have been
feel
real,
like
right?
I'm making it up, right? I'm like reading from a children's book right now.
Yeah,
no,
this feels like
a
Bearstein
real...
/ Bearstains bear thing. Like, I don't think it really happened.
But here's a disheartening thing. You know, Mitch McConnell, and I'm not trying to suggest that Mitch McConnell has some sort of a backbone, but after making that crazy speech where he denounced Trump, but yet didn't vote to convict him anyways, he then said, and I don't remember the words of his speech, but they were very strong. Like, he was basically like, Trump is a menace to society, is essentially like what he said. He has come out since and said, if Trump is the nominee in 2024, that he would, quote, absolutely support him. So Mitch McConnell, who was just like, Trump is a menace to society, would still support this guy. So there's no, I mean, it's like, yes, the reasonable ones need to form a party. And if we think Mitch McConnell's one of the reasonable ones, is he? You know what I mean? With statements like that.
There's no backbone. Nikki Haley did the same thing. They just go left and right, and they just, you know, they seesaw as they need to. You know, I heard a couple people make a couple of interesting points. One person was saying that as the country leans more secular, just over time, we're not as religious as we were. This hardcore religious side, which is, you know, your evangelists and these people who believe all this stuff, they're starting to really, because their tent is shrinking. So they are getting more and more hardened. And so the people who are the last of the former Republican Party, whether it's your Mitch McConnell's or your Lindsey Graham used to be someone
who was somewhat. He probably used the word compassionate conservatism at some point.
Yeah, right, so these guys are holding on. They're seeing the ship sink and they're going, oh, there's one raft left and it's a bunch of nut jobs with horns and, you know, shaman, and they're storming the Capitol, but they're the only group left. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into that boat with these people. Meanwhile, I think they're losing the bigger picture here, because no matter what you do, if you don't open up your tent and start bringing in people and you know, go to a level of sanity, I mean, yes, we have a lot of craziness going on with the QAnons and the people that stormed the Capitol and these people who still don't believe the election was won. But eventually, I think what's going to happen is they're going to have such a small but loud party. But in terms of, you know, unless if they're really able to do what they're trying to do, which is go into these state legislatures and take away the rights of a majority of Americans from voting, I think that they are a dying party as the years go on.
You know, and can I just say about CPAC, everyone who was there, I think, needs to have more fun.
Yes.
You know, the conference did not seem fun. Well, I think if they had more fun and a little less rage, they would, their lives would just already be better.
They're deluding themselves in many ways, right?
Yes.
So they already believe what they believe. So that's wild delusion right there.
That's already a tough one.
And then,
yeah.
You know, I mean, their idea of fun might actually be the rage at this point. You know, it may be, for some people, it's definitely speaking to them in a gut way that we may not be able to get folks to see on the other side.
Yeah,
So, like, you know, just in terms of, like, the voting situation, I think in Georgia, they're already trying to fix all of that. I don't know who told the black and brown people
like
how
Maas
to vote.
Pointed out, but, like Maas pointed out earlier, we had an uptick in turnout.
Right. So,
and it didn't just favor Democrats. The uptick in turnout actually got Republicans elected on the down ballot races. So, like,
when
you make voting easier, it even helps Republicans. Like,
but that's not how it looks. And speaking to the gut of people who are terrified. So I think for them, a release is like going to Orlando with other people who seem to be angry in the same way and yelling about it. That seems to be a blast.
I want to recommend bowling. I want to recommend dessert.
Bowling's fine. I know in the state of Georgia, that was one of the first things that they reopened after they were closed for like 2.5 hours because of COVID. You know what? Let them bowl. Let them bowl. We can't do that.
You know, again, it might be a generalization, but I'm sure that there's a lot of evangelicals and that type as well at these CPAC conferences because they loved Trump and they love all this crazy stuff and they believe whatever he says. And as you said, Nagin, they need to have more fun. For a party who has hardcore religious types who, you know, believe in Christianity, I mean, Jesus turned water into wine. You're absolutely right. If you really love Jesus, just loosen up a little bit. Have a glass of wine. Relax. Talk to a liberal. Man. See how that goes. You know what I'm saying? Open up, broaden your horizons a little bit.
I agree. All right. Well, that's the end of that, folks. Let me know, CPAC, should we have even talked about it, is my question to listeners of Fake the Nation. And I just want to quickly point out, we got an email. We got a bunch of emails about last week's topic on Gina Carano and how she was fired from her job at Disney, whether or not she should have been, et cetera. I got one email I just want to highlight from Wrigley Klein. He wrote, in defense of cancel culture, he wrote, celebrities have an outsized influence over the beliefs of their fans. We are in a pandemic that has led to the deaths of more than 500,000 Americans. And telling thousands of Twitter followers that the disease is a hoax could have serious repercussions. Being an actor is a privilege, not just any old job. If a corporation gives a person a platform, they should use it responsibly. Thank you, Wrigley, for your email. And yes, we didn't have very much of a defense of cancel culture represented on the show last week. So I appreciate the people who wrote in with those thoughts. And they make sense. Now is the end of the show. And I would really love for the people of Fake the Nation to follow all of the stuff that you do. Shalewa Sharp, how do they do that?
Well, I'm on all of the social media that I understand at my advanced age. My handle on pretty much all of it is at Silky Jumbo, all one word, traditional spelling. And so you can find info there. I'm usually talking about Muppets or shows that I'm doing. But then I also have this podcast that I'm co-hosting with Gastor Almonte called The War Report. And we yell about various newsy type items as well once a week. So,
and Gaster Almonte has been on the show as well. So if you want to get a double hit of Fake the Nation alums on a fabulous new podcast, don't forget to subscribe to The War Report. Maz Jobrani, where do they find you?
Well, my podcast is called Back to School with Maz Jobrani. It's on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, including my YouTube channel. And my special, it's called Pandemic Warrior. It's on Peacock TV. And my previous special is called Immigrant. It's on Netflix. And then social media-wise, it's all at Maz Jobrani, M-A-Z-J-O-B-R-A-N-I. So follow me everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as well as Clubhouse, where I'm really having fun. Join me on Clubhouse. It's a lot of fun.
Folks, you should absolutely be watching Maz's special on Peacock. You actually have, Peacock is doing well with the Persians. They have two Iranian-made products on Peacock right now. My last film, Third Street Blackout, and Maz's special, The Pandemic Warrior. So there's more just, and Persian New Year's is coming around. Guys, like, make everything Iranian is what I'm saying in your life.
The Shah was known as the Peacock Throne. So maybe there's some...
There it is. Conspiracy theories. Maz is now writing for QAnon as well and introducing new conspiracy theories. And folks, you know where to find me and all the stuff that I do. If you're hearing this before Thursday night, I'm doing a show online. You can get the information on one of my social media feeds. You can see Ophira Eisenberg and Kendra Cunningham on that show as well with me. And again, I am at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. I would love it if you join me on Patreon. And for your membership, you get extra episodes of Fake the Nation, which is the most exciting. All right. What I would really like to do, though, is thank the people that make Fake the Nation a reality. That is our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps with research. Listeners, we love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail for now at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Pandora, and the SiriusXM app, and do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps more people find out about the show. I'll be back in your earballs next week.